podcast.
No. I was just waiting for someone to say something first.
I know. It's funny. There was a full, like, 15 seconds of silence, and we were just like, we were all thinking to ourselves separately. How do we begin the show?
I thought you were listening to the thunder in the background here.
No.
Is that what that is?
As the storm approaches.
Oh, it's thundering close. Season 4, it's not quite approaching, although I don't think that's what you were saying, but I'm going to draw a parallel instead. Because it's Game of Thrones, so we're talking about Season 3 more.
Yes, we are still within the week of its ending, so you really can't blame us for talking about it. Plus, it was such a jam-packed episode for being a little slow-paced.
Packed jammed.
We can't let go. We can't let go.
No.
Never let go.
Don't let go, Jack.
Don't let go!
Don't do it.
We're the door, ladies and gentlemen, and please never let go of the door, because we all know what happens when you let go of the door.
You sink.
You sink. Mm-hmm. Don't ever sink. Exactly. We just want to be here for you all day, at least 3 days a week.
Yes. Shoot for the moon. Even if you miss, you'll land among the stars. And also don't let go of the door, or you'll sink to the bottom of the ocean.
And look out for black holes, because they are strong and they will pull you in and you may go to another universe.
You know, speaking of black holes and other universes, I felt like we were in the universe of awesome on Wednesday night or Tuesday night.
That was a good transition. There
you
go.
Yeah. Well, I still said speaking of, so I feel like I get points off. This is like why I want to do a reality show called Judges, where it just follows some like three nobodies or whatever. And it doesn't matter what they do at all, but during their daily lives, they should be able to just turn and ask judges. And whatever they just did, there's judges who rate them like 1 to 10 with the cards and all that.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. So even though I said speaking of, so that transition's a little, you know, points off.
Well, they kind of do that with 5 stars in iTunes already with Game of Thrones, so we appreciate those. We've seen a few new ones since Tuesday. Tuesday was fun. I mean, Mikey, you weren't there the whole time, and that was really lame, but I'm glad you called in, and we had a really great time, and the fans missed you. They all missed you.
It was great you could get out of your work function for a couple minutes.
It was cool for us because, you know, we've been making this show for a while, and Selena's not here tonight because we're recording a little late. It's Boys Club on Friday, as we like to call it.
Wow.
Or Boy Zone. Let's start a boy band.
It's already, I think that's already
a boy band. No.
What should we call ourselves?
The Little Rascals is already taken. We'll figure it out. Tell us in the comments.
Well, I think the Young Rascals is taken, right? So maybe
Young Money's taken too.
What do you think of Bronze Bros?
Yeah, that's pretty good. Or just the Bronze. That's
pretty
cool.
The Bronze. I like that.
Ooh, Bronze.
Now you're just taking the off because it's cleaner.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm thinking of like the character Braun and not Bran.
Yeah,
so,
exactly. We know the difference now. It was all because on Tuesday night, obviously, we're talking about it more because it was so much fun. We got to hang out with you guys for the first time. We've been making the show for many, many months and many weeks, and now we're making episode 110. So that's a lot of time to have any kind of real open dialogue with people. And there was just so many of you guys turned out. And I know that I was personally surprised, and I think the rest of us were too.
We had a great quality of questions and owns as well. People talking, you know, basically they all had points to bring up that we had overlooked and had not fully talked about previously. And it just got me thinking. I mean, we had at least a 10-minute conversation about Theon even.
Yeah, no, it was great. And I think that it goes to show that, you know, these things on the internet don't have to be a byproduct, necessarily a bad one, of the great thing that's already being made, because so many of you guys are brilliant. And the fact that our listeners are so smart and awesome just makes me want to do the show even more and better. So that's the plan for the off season. We're going to destroy all of the asses. We're going to destroy them all.
Yeah. And the other thing that was useful was the chat that was going on during. I know, Zach, you were in there.
I was.
But so was everybody else. And so even while people were calling in and speaking with us on Skype, we had instant feedback from all the others listening. And it was just really cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we'll try to do that again soon.
Yeah.
Soonish.
It's a unique way to make sense.
Even for the short period of time that I was on, and I know Sam made an appearance, which was really great as well.
Right.
You know, it was just really cool to, there was one caller on at the time. It sounded like he was from England or Scotland.
It was Gordon Walsh, dude. Gordy Walsh. Yeah.
See? Gordy Walsh. I didn't even know. I thought Selena changed her voice again or something.
Well, you were just like in the middle of traffic in New York City. Like people were hailing cabs. It was crazy. I edited as much of that out as I could.
And when Sam decided to show up, as I think I mentioned on the live show, I was getting these really weird looks and people walking by. I can't imagine why that was.
It's because they see a grown man talking like he's a grown, bigger, softer.
No,
man.
It's because they saw two grown men sharing a phone, Eric.
That's what it was. Are you trying to imply that Sam is not real?
Sam exists in many of our hearts.
In show perpetuity.
In
how about
one
that?
Person's head.
There you go. No, you would have a bunch of listeners to answer to, Eric. They'd burn you at the stake if
they would.
If you told them it wasn't real.
Okay, I will not try to say that he doesn't exist. He absolutely exists.
But the point I was trying to make, I think, was that, you know, I really, you know, when you do a podcast, one of the greatest things that you can get out of it is being able to interact with your listeners and the people that contribute on a regular basis, that leave reviews, that tweet, that send in emails. And that to me is really the special part of it. And I'm sorry I missed out on it. I'm looking forward to the next opportunity. It's really just a whole lot of fun. And it's giving back in a way, listeners giving back to us for what we enjoy doing. And it's just great interaction.
You know, I have a proposal to make. Will you marry me? But also,
yes.
The thank you guys. You both said yes.
I did not say yes.
Oh.
I did.
This is a turn of events.
Sam,
the plot
even
twist.
After I called you not real.
Just kidding.
just kidding. Yeah. Burn, slam.
We're playing games in my heart, Sam.
No, my proposal is that we do the next live show. There may be an opportunity to do this before, but we should do it at the halfway point of the off season to be like, hey, this is as long as we're gonna have to like this. Well, no, now is as long as we're gonna have to wait. But, yeah. you know, we're halfway through, kind of like a support group kind of thing going on. Roughly, what is it, 4 or 5 months from now. So we should look to do that.
That is absolutely hilarious that you say that, because the I was going to name the episode Live Goo Season 3 Support Group, the one that was on Wednesday. That is so funny. I literally changed it at the last minute because I thought it was a little better. But that's technically sort of what it was, because everyone was calling in and talking about their thoughts on Season 3. It just ended. It's a big deal to all of us, especially here on the
group.
Show.
Yeah, especially when we were talking about Kat and John and how sad that was.
Yeah,
it is. And it's such a long wait. That's the other part of it is, you know, with other television shows that are non-HBO, at least you get a couple months, right? I mean, you guys know television better than I do, I think, at least Eric. You know, most shows, how many episodes do they have during a regular season? 20, 25?
It's roughly 20 to 25, I think. Although I will say it really depends, and the standard is no longer really held across the board. Even Lost in the last couple seasons only had 16 episodes.
Right.
And it's a culture, it's a country thing as well. BBC series will last far fewer episodes. And I can't believe I'm about to bring this up on Goo, but Pretty Little Liars, the show that my girlfriend absolutely flips out about.
I love that show.
is on, but it's on again. Like, they premiere 4 separate premieres, like, throughout the year. They're off for, like, maybe a month or two, and then they keep going. So I don't know what the heck they're doing. But they're doing it right, because people only, like, the finale was maybe in mid-March, and then the premiere was last Tuesday. So they just keep going, you know?
A lot of it depends on budgetary restrictions. Like, you'll see some of the more boutique shows like Mad Men that have a higher payroll in the cast or more intricate sets. They will shoot fewer episodes than, let's say, Desperate Housewives that will have 24 or 25 a season because they shoot on a very isolated set. You know, like Wisteria Lane was built and they kind of hung out there.
Yeah.
But in Game of Thrones' case, we already have the subject material and the scripting, so there's really no surprises. They already know what's coming. And so with it being so high budget and being an HBO show, falling into this model was just made sense for them naturally. You know what I mean?
You know, the other thing that I think the wait helps is it helps with George R. R. Martin and his writing, I'm sure, because he's still got 2 books to write, and the series is going to catch up to him if they don't kind of slow it down a little bit.
So it really begs the question, what season 4 is going to look like? Is it going to be just the second half of Storm of Swords, or is it going to, you know, delve a little bit into Feast for Crows, maybe some stuff from A Dance with Dragons, depending on how they tweak the storylines? I know there was a great article over on winterscoming.net taking a look at that. And, you know, obviously, spoiler warning in terms of certain storylines. I don't think they give away a lot of plot points, but just overarching themes and direction for season 4. I think there was one version that was a little bit less spoilerish, and then obviously one more geared towards book readers, but check it out. It's really cool, and it kind of gives a little bit of insight as we wait now, as the wait begins. Where's the countdown clock? I guess we don't have a premiere date, so we can't get one.
I'll talk
of those
to Phil.
Yet.
Let's get one up.
Yeah, let's get one up anyway. General countdown.
I really enjoy the vast difference of listeners and of contributors and of just people that are a part of the community through When Winter Is Coming now through our show, because, you know, after our partnership with them, we've really, really opened the floodgates to such a good cultural divide between book readers and Unsullied. And, you know, for the most part, they all play together really nice. And it's just a ton of admiration I have for everyone who's so far ahead in the series that, you know, refuses to spoil it for the other people because they love the work so much. And also, you know, it's hard for Eric and I, because I know personally for me, I'm a reader and I want to read these books now. But,
yeah,
you know, we've talked about this before. We all kind of understand why Eric and I can't. But just as a reminder, like, we would love to read forward. But it's just part of the show and it's fun and it's discovery and, you know, it's cool.
Yeah. No, and I mean, I think just the people I've been talking to, and we really can't state that enough times, I think, that it's, we actually should be really grateful for not having been spoiled, because we're around this all the time. You know, we have email inboxes, we have a contact, you know, email, and we really could, you know, somebody vindictive could just easily spoil either Zach or myself when we're checking the inbox, and they haven't. And it's never even been a question. We've never been almost spoiled, except by Micah and Selena accidentally slipping or something, trying to put a hint in here and there. But really, it's like, it's considering how many people we reach, every week and how many people we source, you know, comments from and things like that. The fact that you guys haven't spoiled Zach and myself is a cause for great gratitude from us, you know.
Yeah,
so, well, from us to you, from ours to yours.
From good to you.
Merry Christmas, Happy
yes,
New
yes,
Year.
Yes, yes, yes.
No, my policy always is, if I know that something is going to be coming up, let's say with season four, I'm going to tease about it, but I'm never going to say what's going to happen. I'm never going to say who it's going to happen to. I'm never going to say where it's going to be taking place. Mm-hmm. So I think that when you limit yourself in that respect, there's only so much that you can possibly do and possibly say. And it is difficult, because I think there's a challenge in not giving away too much information depending on the topic that we're talking about, because Selena and I have to kind of really be paying attention and not, you know, like, take a little nap at some point during the recording, because if we say something based on what comes up, then, you know, we run the risk of spoiling you or spoiling people who are listening to the show, and we don't want to do that.
I don't want you to do it either.
Yeah, so please don't.
Very much so, this show is geared for everybody, though. We're definitely not a recap podcast of the TV show, because that's 10 episodes of the year. I mean, I guess if you count the Friday episodes where we do a little bit of lean back off of that, but, you know, we have an entire off season that we dedicate to getting into the meat of this stuff. And, you know, there's only been one of those so far, and I foresee many of those in the future. But regarding the show, catching up with George's books, guys, I have a theory, and I believe that this will be the first time that we've seen something like this. But I think that George and HBO are going to line up their releases very, very close. Like, I'm foreseeing, you know, for example, and this is just purely speculation and I'm probably completely wrong, but I think it'd be really cool if the last book came out, you know, just a handful of months before the final season. So it was just, mm-hmm. you know, almost perfectly timed. That would be really, really special.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. I think we're obviously going to see The Winds of Winter, hopefully, within the next year.
That's book six?
That's book six.
Okay.
Yep.
And if it's going to depend how HBO structures things post season four. So mm-hmm. do they begin to incorporate things from future books? How are they going to take storylines and move them forward, or maybe eliminate them depending on their level of importance? Remember, Benioff yeah. and Weiss know the end game, so they can ultimately make the decision, we don't really need this character, we don't really need this storyline. And that might be something that could potentially upset readers of the books, as is the case, as we've seen in, you know, any book to screen or book to television series adaptation, when characters get cut, storylines get cut, it can really anger people. But I think these guys are true passionate fans. They'll act in the best interest of the content, and I'm looking forward to see how they do it, because it's not going to be an easy job.
I think the good thing that may shine like a guiding light into this in the future is that so far, we know from what they've produced so far that they love sex. They love Swagger. They love, you know, they love all the reasons that we love the show. They love that because it's in the show, you know? So I think they'll continue if as long as characters continue to stay classy, San Diego, we'll be fine.
And I'm really glad that we get the chance to see this because there's plenty of amazing fantasy series. I mean, I don't think that there are many that are on the level of this, but it's still really special that we even get to have this show. So I tend to not really think of anything in the negative light. I mean, we get a little bit descriptive and we critique some on the podcast because that's kind of the mechanic of what we do.
That's what we got to do.
Part of the content. But yeah. I mean, overarching, I am just giddily thankful with rosy cheeks and dancing pink socks that this is a TV show. You know what I mean? That
we dancing get to see this. Socks.
I don't even know where that came from.
Yeah. Those are some
anyways,
nice socks.
So we wanted to talk about the fall off of season 3 because we talked a whole lot about it with you guys on Tuesday night and that later became our Wednesday episode. And we promised you guys that this episode would be the episode where we share to you our owns of season 3.
Yes.
And that will be later in the episode.
That will be later in the episode. And I wanted to talk to you guys from, well, actually, no, Zach, you remember on the live episode, we had a little moment where we were talking about honor and Selena. And we were talking about, I guess we were comparing Stannis's virtue to Davos Seaworth. And somebody had pointed out to me that, well, you know, Davos is actually probably more honorable than Stannis. We actually got an email from a guy named Steve Atwell. I wanted to read on the show, and it's actually really insightful.
Read it. Do it.
Gonna do it. This is from Steve Atwell again, and he emailed us at our email address, which is, I should say, contact@gameofowns.com. He says, I feel that sometimes folks on Goo tend to equate all virtues with honor and being a good guy with honorable, and I don't think that's quite right. Stannis is not an honorable man, and it's a mistake to think of him as a protagonist or antagonist in terms of honor. Honor is ultimately a question of means. Eddard refuses to seize Cersei or back Joffrey or back Renly because that's not how honorable people behave. Stannis's virtue is justice. Stannis is just a man, and for him, justice is a question of...
Is it just
man. It's just a question.
He believes that just outcomes need to happen, whether that's the cleansing of the royal court of corruption, or the punishment of rebels, or how he approaches the question of what to do with Davos or Gendry, and he will use any means necessary to make that happen. Hence, to him, Renly was a traitor and a rebel, and the punishment for treason is death, and to Stannis it really didn't matter whether Renly died because of Melisandre or in battle. Whereas to an honorable man like Eddard, the how of Renly's death would have mattered a lot. And Davos's virtue isn't honor either.
Ooh.
Yes, he's a man with conscience who tries to do the right thing and who does think the means are important, hence saving Gendry, hence being utterly disgusted by Melisandre's shadow magic. But what most characterizes Davos is loyalty. He is completely loyal to Stannis to the point of death. He will accept being thrown into the dungeons or ordered to be executed if Stannis wills it. He's willing to tell Stannis the absolute truth, even if it's not what Stannis wants to hear, and he's willing to act against Stannis' will if he feels it to be in Stannis' best interest. It's what set him apart from most of the characters in the series. He really doesn't put his self-interest above his loyalty to his liege lord, Steve Atwell.
Race for the Iron Throne.
His liege lord is Steve Atwell.
No, that was the end. That was
I'm
the
joking. Sign. I'm joking. But,
so what do you guys think? Did we screw up? Did we mess up kind of how we view honorable...
Let me touch on Steve's email here for a second, because I like the way that he presented this. However, I'm not somebody who is going to look solely at a character and say that they can only have one virtue. And I think that's exactly what he's doing, unless he's saying that justice is what defines Stannis more so than anything else, and that for Davos, it's loyalty. But I don't think that you can necessarily say that these are the only components to these characters. To say that Davos doesn't have honor, I don't agree with that. I think that that's part of his character, just like there may be some element of Stannis' character that you could also characterize as honor. It may not be the same as Ned's, but it still exists. And that's my only issue with what he's presenting here.
No, I think it's a good point, but Micah, you're also right. I mean, honorable is what most of these men are. I mean, in their own way. And yes, Stannis, justice for Stannis doesn't include murdering Gendry for the hope that some spirit magic might work and make him fulfill his destiny. To me, that's not justice, but that is within the realm of justice because he believes he is the one true king. And that is a means to complete the justice that he believes he deserves. So, I mean, you know, Steve, you're right in many different ways, but I don't think it's fair to limit one person to one thing. But I think it's interesting to look at it this way because, I mean, if George wrote it this way, it's interesting because these different characters all kind of pull from the same source, but in different ways. It creates different characters and it creates more depth.
Yeah, I mean, I ended up Googling it while we were talking here, and I looked up honor. This is from the Wikipedia page. I think it's interesting, though, and I think it's very relevant. Honor is an abstract concept, there you go, entailing a perceived quality of worthiness and respectability that affects both the social standing and the self-evaluation of an individual or nation or corporate body, etc. Accordingly, individuals are assigned worth and stature based on the harmony of their actions with a specific code of honor and the moral code of the society at large. So here you go, because this is a show, the moral code, what's going to be the moral code of the society at large, if we can break the fourth wall and say we're viewing these characters, so our own honor code is going to be forced upon these characters, regardless of what life is like in the series too. So if you think you know, walking around shirtless is honorable, you could say Gendry is honorable. You know, and you can make that point. So, you know, it is very abstract and broad.
And what I was going to add is you're reading through these characters' perspectives when you're in the books, right? Ooh. So you're getting multi-layered perspective of who these characters are. And they all have different elements and different characteristics to them. It's not limited to just saying Davos is loyal, Stannis is defined by justice, Ned is honorable. They all have different components to who they are. And, you know, Zach touched on it, and I think I brought it up in my initial comment. There's layers, man. Just like Donkey says,
onions
in Shrek. It's like onions, man. You can't just say if you're saying it's their defining characteristic, I agree with you for the most part. But Davos is or was a smuggler, right? He was he was a thief. He was a pirate.
Not honorable.
That's not very honorable. That's not. And who is he loyal to? Nobody but himself. Now he's loyal to Stannis, one would argue. So characteristics defining traits change over time. And if you look at these characters now, they're very much different from, you know, when you learn about their backstory throughout the course of the series. So, I mean, I like Steve's email. I think he brings up really important points. And I think you can't necessarily define Stannis as being an honorable man because of all of what he's done leading up to this point, including killing his own brother. But I think there's elements of him that some would interpret as being honorable. And what those are, email us, tweet us.
No, I think too that this topic will probably come up in future episodes. I mean, this is, you know, the kind of talk we can really have during this off season that's upcoming.
Absolutely.
We'll be able to, I sense, you know, that we'll be able to talk about other characters and whether or not they are honorable or have honorable traits, like you're saying. But yeah, I mean, I wanted to thank Steve for sending that in, and I think that's a very valuable, it's the kind of feedback we like to get, especially, you know, after something that was only taken up maybe 45 seconds during the show, to really be able to go back into it and analyze it and think about
it. It's going to fuel a lot of discussion, I'll tell you that right now, because people have very strong opinions of all the characters.
Yes.
But I've seen a lot as it relates to Stannis. I've seen comments on winnerscoming.net as well, talking about not just this discussion, but other discussions we've had in the past as it relates to Stannis.
I actually, I mean, for the record, I enjoy all three of these characters. I don't dislike Stannis at all. I thought he was pushing into the minor character field until the end of the season. It's cool to see. And you like Stannis, Eric. You're a huge Stannis fan.
Yeah, not as much as Davos, but I think you're right. I mean, when you said you thought he was fading into obscurity following Blackwater, I think I'd be with you on that. And then now him being the first person to take that letter seriously. I mean, you said it, you know, that's just great. That shows that he's coming back. in a big way, maybe.
Well, yeah, his head's not in his ass like 17 other rulers. So that's cool, and that's great, because I think that the leadership in Westeros needs to be aware of everything that's happening, not just who should marry who and why should they marry them and whether or not they're making children, because that is a very shallow way to look at the kingdom. And I think that that is going to spell an end for a handful of people if they don't change their way, which could happen, couldn't happen. That's the great thing about this whole thing is we all have opinions. If we're on Sully, we don't necessarily know the facts. So everyone can have opinions and we can all be entitled to them. We can all discuss them and it's cool. But Steve, this email was the shit because your formatting was great.
Yeah.
And it's cool.
You spoke English, which always helps. Yeah.
love English, no Swahili. So that's good. Thank you, Steve, for this email because we'll be looking forward to more from you.
And feel free to rebut whatever I said earlier. I don't even remember at this point.
You agree with him, though. I mean, and I agree with Steve. Steve, you're right. I mean, you're completely right.
One thing we should do is let's revisit Steve's email as we begin to read A Clash of Kings, and we start to see things from Davos's perspective.
Ooh, and from the book, without the sulliedness of Hollywood television.
I can't wait. Davos's perspective. Woo!
Well, there's actually a few other things that we never really touched on during the Monday and Wednesday episodes, and we've been getting a shitload of emails, and a shitload would probably equate to one Tonka truck full of shit, not the toy, but the real one.
Well, no, a Hodor-sized.
Yeah, a Hodor-sized load of shit, and that thing, a Hodor-sized load of shit. And the thing that you guys brought up consistently were the giggles being pointed in the direction of one of our favorite minor characters.
Good old Podrick.
Old tripod.
Yeah. Tripod. when he entered, and I'm sure you guys noticed this too, there's a scene of him coming down the stairs. It's right at his entrance. And there's two girls. And he's just walking down some steps. The two girls look at him, laugh, point, giggle. He makes a left and goes to, is it whoever he's walking to?
Tyrion.
Is it Tyrion? Okay, but that's a separate shot. And so essentially there's a shot that's just entirely him coming down some stairs and some girls giggling. That is completely removable. It was just added in. Like, it wasn't a necessary part of the transition of that scene. The scene actually picks up later when he's walking towards Tyrion. Separate camera, everything. They literally just set up a shot where Pod's coming down and getting giggled.
Yeah, well, I think given that it was the finale, it was just a throwback to what we've learned about Podrick this season.
Mm-hmm. I think that's fair, or what we haven't learned.
Well, no, because Brian told us when Brian Cogman was on the show, he was like, yeah, it was a fun joke. But seeing this definitely completes it full circle for me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's funny. So it's cool that they brought it back. And, you know, obviously they did it way before he was on the show and told us. Mm-hmm. So this was the plan all along. So that's cool. I'm glad that, you know, that just goes to show that you need to wait around before you make harsh judgments on this program, because they think things out. They're in for the slow burn, like George is.
Yeah. No, it's
and it's never a bad thing to have girls giggling at you in that way.
Well, sometimes it could be a
bad
thing. It
depends if they're making fun of you.
Yeah.
It's not funny.
No, I'm glad we got to see Pod a little drunk too, a little saucy Pod, a little sauce Pod. They had a little bit of wine. I'm just looking forward to more scenes with these people. That's why season four is going to be so fun.
Yeah, this was just like an essentially, besides the Tyrells, it's like a who's who of who we're still keeping, in touch with. Well, so Pod's going to talk to Tyrion, but a lot happened with the Tyrion character without Tyrion being present. And I'm talking, of course, about Varys's speech that he gave about, like, Touche. And I guess I didn't ask you guys this on the other show, but do you think, because at the end of that conversation, Shay says, Tyrion, if Tyrion wants me out, he should come to me himself. Do you think Tyrion really put Varys up to that to ask Shay to leave? See, I don't either.
No.
Absolutely not. Come on, Shay, you know better than that.
But that's how she took it. She was like, oh, you know, it's like, what?
What is she, Italian now?
It's good. But Varys, was Varys acting of his own accord?
Yeah.
Yes, of course, because Varys cares about the kingdom, and he knows that between all of the people that are in a good position to make good decisions, Tyrion Lannister will be a good man.
This
you will be.
Scene endears me to Varys, like, so much greater than anything else, because he genuinely does care. And he's telling Shay in the most, like, in the nicest way possible. And not to mention he gives her a sizable amount of money. Yes. It's the Terminator scene all over again. Get out.
Absolutely. It's and I think there has been a growing relationship between Varys and Tyrion all season long, and they've done a great job developing that. And if you remember during the small council meeting in this episode, Tyrion makes his comment to Joffrey about how kings are dropping like flies, and because Joffrey calls him a monster. And Varys has this moment where he gives this little snigger, and you can tell Varys likes Tyrion, and this goes back a couple seasons now. Mm-hmm. They have this really interesting dynamic between the two of them, and I really do believe that Varys has a tremendous amount of confidence in Tyrion and his ability to lead, and he doesn't want to see him potentially distracted by somebody like Shay. Tyrion's already been married off to Sansa, so that's a power play right there. And he feels that the more that Shay is there, the more of a distraction she's going to be, and the worse that's going to be for somebody like Tyrion.
Varys is a man's man, okay? I don't care if he's been castrated and his balls have been removed. Varys is a man's man because he's got the balls to remain in the kingdom during all of this shit, to remain at the top, not just inside of Westeros, because he's got his hands dirty on a lot of things. He has enough time to go kidnap someone or somehow procure someone through his own means, keep him in a box, show it off to a few friends when the time calls, and then to make these cool moves. I mean, he's like the modern day equivalent of the Coke brothers and a few lobbyists thrown together. Like, he's doing a great job, and he's a tough dude, and we hated him so much. I think we all did we all three hate him early on?
I think it's fair to say
I didn't like him because I thought he played a significant part in Ned's death, and we just finished the commentary episodes for season one.
Yeah.
And I was reminded about his talks with Ned in the dungeon when he was just not very nice. But that was kind of, I guess, Varys' own way to be like, damn it, Ned, like, you had potential because you're the Warden of the North.
Yeah.
You're from this long line of Starks that have ruled Winterfell for thousands of years, and you are the man, and you are good friends with the king, and you could have came in and you could have done some great things. But you did not play correctly. And so I think he was just sour. I don't think he was evil.
Yeah, you're right. He was definitely sour. I mean, this scene where Varys comes and pays off, or tries to pay off Shay, and she says no, actually makes me think less of Shay. I mean, he was reasoning with her. I mean, here's the thing. Like, yes, she loves him, but I think she's being a little selfish. And the reason, like, he has this quote, Varys says, he has the mind for it and the will for it and the right last name to actually make a difference. You know, Varys is talking about actually leading a centuries long, you know, what could eventually be a second centuries long peace, which the realm has not seen really since Aegon Targaryen. I mean, since the Mad King was slain. I mean, Robert kind of had this uneasy 12 years where he was getting drunker and people were starting to seize, you know, it just wasn't comfortable.
Varys, it's gradually taking bigger shits.
Yeah.
You know?
Varys really thinks that Tyrion can do this, but he's saying, and this is a recurring theme too, thinking with your man parts, throughout the series, is that it distracts you. And, you know, he really feels that, Tyrion, especially, you know, we can weigh in on his Sansa marriage, you know, that this is the way to really nurse the kingdom back to health.
I don't necessarily agree with it though, because, the point was brought up that after Shay arrived in Tyrion's life, he dropped his whoring. He dropped most of his bad habits that kind of kept him away from fulfilling the potential that he has. Mm. So let's say Tyrion actually is in love with Shay, because he is, as far as what we've been shown.
Yeah.
And let's say Shay is actually in love with Tyrion, because it appears that they've tried to tell that message, even though it looks like they've done their damnedest to make her, you know, scorned and a little jealous, and I don't really know exactly. I can't make a real assumption because I don't know what is in their minds. They haven't really completed her arc yet, or really, I feel like, gotten too far into it to give us much depth. But let's say for this sake that they are in love with each other and Tyrion has dropped these things. I mean, you just said literally thinking with your man parts and being distracted. And I think that is the advantage that Tyrion has right now. He's less distracted. He's not going out and whoring, and he's not filling Baelish's cup with some cash from his whorehouses. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, but Varys still wants it to be less so because he wants to send Shay away.
Keep in mind, though, that he also now has a wife who's not going to be giving any to him.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, and
well,
I agree
with
you.
He's not going to take any from, you know?
Yeah. No, you're right.
Because he's a good guy.
Yeah, you're right.
Which defines his character, going back to Steve's email from earlier. But let's
well,
not
do you
get
think,
into that.
Do you think that Tyrion will take that? I mean, now that he is on, but he's on better terms with Sansa. So I'm thinking, I wasn't thinking at all that he wasn't going to get any from Sansa. I mean, I'm not saying it'll be immediate, but they're warming to each other. And I think eventually it's possible, probable that he will, you know, give her a son. And I think especially after the argument that Cersei made, I think it's on his mind a little bit more than the disgusting, you know, I don't know. So it is debatable whether Tyrion will go back to his whoring ways if Shae were to leave.
I don't know if he will, though. I mean, I see the point. I see it so many different ways, and it's so interesting that they gave it to us in the finale, because we don't really know what's going to happen, whether Shae is going to leave or not, because I don't think she really gave a definitive answer. But he could have just been changed by love itself. And now with everything getting just more and more serious, he may just remain a stand-up dude. Because, I mean, before there was a lot less strife. He had never been made the Hand. Ned was never slaughtered. There wasn't an attack on King's Landing. You know, the list goes on of things that have changed. Not to mention the threat from the North, which they're all going to find out about coming soon. You know, at least what we're going to see in season four. So maybe
one would hope, yeah.
Right. So maybe it could go both ways. Like, he could relapse and become a shell of what he is now, and he could be less likely to be an outstanding leader. Or on the other hand, he could still do it with Shae or do it without Shae. Like, it's hard to say. It's really hard to say.
Just keep in mind what happened the last time he was in love with this woman and things went really, really bad. Some could argue that that actually propelled him into this type of behavior that he exhibited up until Shae.
Right. Well, also just being a wealthy young man growing up where your family has power. Yeah. You see that in modern days. You know,
it was a trick. I think Tyrion's got the respect now from others that he's earned, and I think it makes him a little bit more comfortable. You know, to be tricked like he was with Jaime and the first, you know, wife was harsh for him, and he definitely acts out. Like I said, even at the wedding ceremony when he was way too drunk way too quickly, I thought that was a little... Well, I thought it was much. You know, it was
happened to all of us, though.
Much.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We've all gotten drunk at weddings.
Remember Emerson's wedding, guys?
Yes.
No,
yes, I do.
No, you don't. And neither do I. And that's why. So let me just say that. No. I was remembering that the other day fondly, of course. Yeah. But
we should do
but
that
anyway,
again.
No. I did want to mention, I mean, Tyrion has the makings of a leader. And he even says to Cersei, God, I feel like I say her name differently every time I pronounce it. It's not difficult for me. It just comes out of my mouth differently every time. Sometimes I say Cersei, sometimes I say Cersei.
I mean, there's pressure when you're making a podcast. You know what I mean?
There is. Yeah. It's so much pressure.
It just pops out. Yeah.
He tells Cersei, every time we deal
with... I call her brother fucker.
There you go. That's easy.
Sam's term for her is the best. Tyrion says to Cersei, every time we deal with an enemy, we create two more. And there's obviously some imagery there with, gosh, is it the multi-headed creature?
The Hydra.
The Hydra, thank you. You know, with the heads growing back and from Greek
or Cthulhu,
you know, history.
Yeah.
But it's a very political thing to say. And you know, he's actually having a brotherly, sisterly conversation with her about the future of the kingdom, not just about her son.
Right.
So I think Tyrion could very well be as good for the kingdom as Varys is saying. And I think we felt that way about Tyrion for a while. But a lot of that had to do with his, you know, jovial nature. But I think now we're really seeing that he could lead. A
couple of things, though, I wanted to bring up with Varys. I think that in that particular scene, you're seeing him continue to emerge as this really major power player. You know, even going back to season one, we see him with Illyrio in the dungeons. I'm sure there are scenes throughout season two as well that we could talk about. But Varys is playing a really, really interesting game. And I want to learn more about it. I really do. And I'm fearful for Shae by rejecting this offer, knowing what kind of player Varys is. I'm not saying that he's vindictive, but he does it in such a way that it makes sense. Mm-hmm. And I think by Shae taking those diamonds and throwing them back at him, she's putting herself in a very bad position moving forward.
Yeah, not only is she in her position, but she's poor again.
Yeah.
She was
really
rich for like 10 minutes.
If Varys feels, here's the real question, if Varys feels that how he feels is important enough, what lengths will he go to get Shae killed or removed from the picture? Like, will he sacrifice like a grieving Tyrion for like a couple months or whatever in for the greater good. If Shay won't leave willingly, like what lengths will he go to if he believes that Tyrion is the one best hope for the kingdom?
I'm going to say that my newfound like for Varys would have me draw the opinion that he would not do that because he and Tyrion are buds now.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But he's also a hard worker and he wants to see shit get done. And, you know, motivated people, they make some hard decisions sometimes.
Hmm. Well, maybe he can learn a trick or two from his magician friend and make things disappear.
But as far as Sansa and Tyrion are concerned,
yeah,
I don't pity Sansa for this arrangement. I mean, I think that she's been in this situation completely against her will.
I think it protects her, though.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, out of all the options that there were, Tyrion Lannister is going to make sure that she is unharmed. He's going to do whatever he can to make sure she's unharmed. And on top of that, he respects her as a person and as a woman and as a lady. And I think that, you know, considering what she's been going through leading up until her marriage with Tyrion, this is the better option. Because, you know, we just saw in the finale where he said to Joffrey, you know, she's not your plaything anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, this is my wife. And I don't really give two fucks if you're the king. Like, this is my wife. This is a small girl and you need to back the fuck off, dude. Yeah. Seriously.
Yeah. No, and I mean, even just when you said that, I realized like she is a lot safer with Tyrion than she would have been with Loras. I mean, clearly Loras is the one she wanted to marry, but the Tyrells are on their way out, if you ask me. I mean, the Lannisters hate the Tyrells.
I don't know, man. They have a very rich house as well. And, you know, they're wardens of the South. And I think
Reigns
that...
of Castamere. Reigns of Castamere.
Yeah. No, I don't know if they're going to get two for two, though. I just don't think that they're going to be able to take down the Tyrells. I don't know.
Well, I just meant the Lannister. In terms of the Lannisters harming Sansa, it would have been a lot easier for them to do it if she was with the Tyrells.
One question I had for you guys. Eric, you brought up the quote from Tyrion, every time we deal with an enemy, we create two more. But there was a clear sense of victory in this season finale for the Lannisters, and they say the war is over. You know, Rob has been defeated. He's dead. Catelyn's dead.
Oh, I think you're right. In many ways, it is a Lannister victory. We did talk about them being on top, but in general, they're back together. You know, I really wanted to see more fallout from Jaime's return.
My question to you was that, do you feel there's resolution? Do you guys feel the war is over?
No. But only, I mean, we've been shown, well, not only this enemy from the north, but let's consider that a separate war. Consider, like, completely disregarding the White Walkers, you do have several parts of the kingdom still that loose ends to be tied up. You know, there is Stannis, who is probably geographically out of the picture.
An honorable man.
But he's still clearly looking to make a move of some sort. And you know, he's not going to get along. Like, in terms of banding together under one common enemy, I said I wouldn't bring up the White Walkers. But the Baratheons and Lannisters still have shit. There's also, you know, the issue of the Freys and what the Freys have done. You know, they're not going to necessarily be trusted ever again, like you said, Micah. And just from what we know, I mean, the Boltons are crazy, sadistic bastards. I wouldn't be... You know, I would actually send them first to kill the White Walkers.
You guys go ahead.
You know, maybe they get along. Some men. Like, everybody's allies, but I just don't think the war is over. I couldn't say, except the Tullys are in a heck of a pickle because one of them is being remained, you know, captive, held captive, and the other one's on the run. Like, if there's any Tullys left in Riverrun, they are also not going to be on the Lannister side. So I don't think the battle's quite over, but I think, you know, what they mean when they say that is essentially the biggest hurdles are, you know, over. And this is when it gets dangerous, is because, you know, a little bit of pride, a little bit of arrogance, they can easily slip up.
And let us not forget Daenerys as well.
Absolutely mm-hmm. not. And also Balon Greyjoy, who has made the decision not to tuck his tail between his legs. So yeah,
the Greyjoys are making waves.
And I wouldn't be really necessarily scared of the Greyjoys. I mean, that's probably a shitty assumption. But, you know, as far as the show is concerned, they haven't shown us much of what kind of fighting strength that they have. I mean, I know that they have a place in Westeros, so obviously they can handle their own. So I'd be interested to see what sort of opposition they're going to get, because with the Boltons now, the Wardens of the North, maybe that's going to be the people they're battling. Mm-hmm. But I just think in general, the revolution that it was actually the Boltons that destroyed Winterfell that we got at the end of this season. I mean, that really just blew my mind because I didn't see that coming. I thought for sure it was different. But now that I think about it, that would have really have been the only option. And I think that that's what they were trying to do with the entire arc of Ramsay and Theon scenes was, oh, at the very end, we're going to let you know that Ramsay Bolton is a Bolton, and they're the people that went and got Theon. And I guess they preemptively took care of Winterfell.
No, and I just wonder what would have happened if Jon Arryn hadn't died. If Ned were still in the North, would there have been any kind of acting from the Boltons against the Starks like this? You know, to seize more power. Would they ever have been ambitious if not for that catalyst? And I think
there was a good amount of peace at the time.
Yeah, but like it just seems like that they would have done this regardless. Or they would have waited for an opportunity. But clearly there wasn't as much peace as we really thought there was if these houses are turning on each other so greatly.
I think that they were just biding their time and waiting for some shit to storm, you know?
Hmm. Well, it's in their sigil, as somebody pointed out on the live show.
Yeah. So that's cool. It's all a lot of great stuff. We've got a lot of good material. And, you know, the more you look at this last episode, there's so much more than what could be speculated 10 minutes after record or 10 minutes after airing. Mm-hmm. So that's cool.
Yeah. And did you guys talk any more on the live show about the final scene with Daenerys?
No, I think for me, it was, you know, it was a little tense because the gates were locked. You know, and we heard like some thundering footsteps and weren't quite sure what was going on. But they filled that space pretty well with those extras.
Learning the actual meaning behind a lot of that happened. I think that's really great. And, you know, it's not to say that we can't have an explosion or a field of nasty enemies at the end of every season. I think it was cool that we were given some terrible, terrible shit at the end of episode 9 and at the beginning of this same episode, some terrible, terrible shit.
Yeah.
You know what they did with Grey Wind? That was terrible. I hate that for the Starks, the ones that are left at least. And, it was cool to see Dany getting hers, you know, cause obviously this is the role that she's going to play. And it just makes me even more curious about what she's going to do when she inevitably arrives in Westeros. And that was the point, I think, just to keep us waiting and wanting to see what's going to happen with this mother now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that we touched on the fact that the Lannisters, for the time being, believe that the war is over, but clearly Daenerys is able to continuously add to her forces and is building this massive army. You know, she got the Unsullied from Astapor. Now she's moved on to Yunkai. And one would think that she's added thousands upon thousands of more people to her army. And you know, that's going to take quite a number of boats to cross the narrow sea. I mean, I'm not going to lie.
They need Roger Cassell to train some of those people, you know?
They do. Not all of them. Maybe they can reattach his head and and bring him back for season 4. But
Roderick and Jory go to visit Daenerys. Hey, Barristan's here.
they'd get along just like Great John.
Yes, they would. You know, this is my secret hope, man. I hope that this entire time that Barristan's hanging out with Dany, that when Jorah's not around, because Jorah might disagree for certain reasons, he's just like, you know, that Ned Stark was a cool guy. Those Starks are just some honorable people. They take care of the North. Like, if you were ever to take over, you could trust them to take care of the North.
Yeah.
You know, because they're some pretty upstanding individuals. So when they arrive to Westeros, you know, with their entire army and all their boats, and they find
Joined
out
forces.
Through the grapevine. Well, no, they find out through the grapevine that what the Lannisters did to the Starks at a wedding, nonetheless, and just throw in a few slaves. There's a few slaves that were at the wedding, too, that they killed, too. She's going to be like, motherfuckers. And she's going to just have her dragons eat every Lannister in charge, except Tyrion, because he's cool.
It's really interesting to think that it's really interesting to think that she would have any allies when she crosses the sea. She's clearly not in contact with any of them that we're aware of. So, you know, but inevitably you have to make these allegiances to survive. So, you know, how could she ever get the full story of what these houses are about in order to correctly align herself with the right people and people who aren't going to hold slaves and be evil, like the phrase in the Lannisters.
Barristan's like, let me introduce you to Varys. He's been keeping check on things while I've been gone.
Yeah, that's true. The Barristan connection is good because
it's
at
key.
Least,
yeah,
it is key.
It's her. I mean, aside from Jorah, it's her one tie back to Westeros, and
he's been in the Kingsguard for so many years. You know.
Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely. And I just think it's this great juxtaposition that you have everything going on in Westeros, but then Dany is off East, and she's kind of forgotten about. Nobody pays any attention to her. Occasionally, she'll come up in conversation. We had that. Wasn't there a conversation earlier this season with when Joffrey and Tywin were talking with each other in the throne room, and they mentioned Dany? But the less they pay attention to her, the more she's able to build up this army, the larger her dragons grow, and hopefully one day we'll be able to be ridden across the narrow sea. So I think that, you know, while the Lannisters for the time being see things as being all well and good, I don't know that I want to be the family in power when Dany brings her army across the narrow sea.
He's like, who's in charge? They're like, the Greyjoys. No, it's the Paines. It's them. The Paines are in charge. Just get them. No, I think it's going to be so cool because at the end of the day, Daenerys is the ruler. You know, everyone else is a usurper to her. When the Targaryens conquered and they took over a long time ago, I mean, it was a long time ago.
Yeah, a long time ago.
And she's going to come in and be like, hey, all of you warring people, killing all these people, having your own agendas and your own initiatives and saying what's justice and what's not. Fact is, you're killing people and they're all dead. So I'm going to take care of everything and then all the normal people can live in peace. Because that's all the normal people want. And I hope that that's what she does after she takes care of the White Walkers. Or the White Walkers could take care of her. I mean, you never know. You never know. The end. Exactly. You can't stop the long winter. You know what I mean? The planets are much bigger than any dragons. Although, how cool would it be if Dany, Barristan, and Jorah each rode their own dragon?
My mind is blown. A gray worm could swim.
Well, yeah, he could swim the whole way. Because you know Barristan is a tough SOB. Imagine Barristan hopping off the back of a dragon blowing fire.
Yeah, that's pretty badass.
We can speculate. It's a Friday episode. Allow us to do this, please.
Yes. No, I would say that any season that has Barristan on the back of a dragon would be the own of that season.
That needs to be the album artwork for next season when they do it on iTunes. Just Barristan on the back of a dragon with a flaming sword, and then like in Star Wars style with like faces superimposed in the front.
Yeah.
Everyone's like smiling or looking at the camera stoically, but then there's the Hound just looking terrified at the fire on the album artwork. Like,
Yeah, no, not dragons. Why did it have to be dragons? Well, that we were talking about that being an own of the season. Why don't we get to the point of it being where we give our owns of season 3?
All right.
You guys have had enough time to think about this. Micah, go.
I'm going to give my own of the season to Tywin Lannister for orchestrating the Red Wedding. For all those letters that he wrote.
Because some credit is due to the phrase, surely.
No.
None.
It's due to the cunning nature of the lion himself, and all those letters that he wrote, all the planning that he did, all the promises and allegiances that he made. He turned the Boltons against Rob. He convinced Walder Frey to do what he did. Nobody owned more than Tywin this season, not only for that, but for the conversation he had with Tyrion and Cersei, when he told them, you guy and you gal, you're getting married. He owned Joffrey in the throne room.
Yeah.
There wasn't, he owned the Queen of Thorns. There wasn't anybody to me that owned more this season than Tywin Lannister.
Wow.
It's a safe own, man.
It's a good own.
It is.
This was Tywin's season. We were just in it.
Yeah.
I got one, guys.
Sam, what's your own of the season?
Well, Sam, since you're here.
My own of the season was forgetting that piece of dragon glass to piss Eric's skull off, only to come back in the season finale and be like, bitch, check out all this dragon glass I got in my cloak.
Well, yeah, that's
so
too bad.
Suck it.
I'm getting claps for that, Sam. That was very good. And
that
nice
was
show.
Very nice.
This is a tough one, you know. There's a lot of really great things that happened this season. That's true. Think Tywin being the obvious own. Honorable mention could be to the giant in the north for hammering things with his fist into the ground. I think that is probably the largest feat of strength that we've seen in the entire season so far. So that's technically an own. I'm going to get down to it. Dany freed people. That was really great. Lots of them. And not just once. She also freed them, but kind of didn't free them because they live with her and work for her. But it's, you know, it's
Will.
It's Will. Willpower matters.
Yeah.
I think that this is not, I mean, I think the default would have to be Tywin, but barring Tywin and barring the action of a select few throughout the season that didn't necessarily span the whole season, my own of the season would have to go to whatever the entity that is the Red God.
Yes.
Because throughout this entire season, he has been twisting the strings and twisting the fate, testing the loyalty, performing miracles, some would say, of several of our major characters. And it spanned throughout the whole season and into the last season. And it's going to keep going. It's going to keep messing with people's heads. It's going to keep saving people. It's going to keep causing murders, maybe saving lives. You know, really, I don't know. But I do know that it has happened. It happened throughout the whole season, and it caused a lot of drama within the show. So the Red God, whatever it is, if it's a god or if it's some like mage standing on an island 1,700 miles away, just casting a continuous spell, you know, like when Saruman was making the shit happen.
Yeah.
And he was in Gandalf's like trying to like speak against it across the whole Middle Earth. Like it's sort of that. It could be that situation. I don't know. I don't know. So the Red God, you know, thank you for being a color that's easy and has a lot to do with the show.
The Red God thanks you, Zach.
Oh, Eric. Damn.
My own, then, must go to one Sir Davos Seaworth, who, from early on, remember, we suspected he might be dead following the events of Blackwater. I didn't. I remained faithful, as you would to a Red God, because I saw that Davos saw that it was dragon juice, dragon fire, wildfire before, and he had like the 1 second notice to jump off the boat before everybody else got sizzled. So I was faithful, but we weren't sure, you know? And from the first moment this season, when we find him on the rock with his shirt off, just surviving, to the point where he, you know, he travels back to Stannis, stabs Melisandre, tries to kill Melisandre, is imprisoned, you know, learns to read.
And, Thank you.
Here's the thing. And this is really it that really shocked me kind of reviewing the final, final moments is that he basically, you know, read the letter that said that they need more people on the wall and was able to formulate his entire position on freeing Gendry and then the trump card that he played getting out of, you know, being killed just all because of that letter, which he would not have been able to do had he not learned to read. So Davos's story in this season was a story of redemption, or not even redemption, self-improvement. And really he dealt with his, you know, mourning over his son. He kind of wronged a right by freeing Gendry. And really, so his journey this season was, I think, one of the strongest owns. And, you know, learning to read definitely, but being able to read that letter and bring it to Stannis' attention, also very unworthy.
And that was a good point, because he started from shirtless in the middle of a rock. And the only reason he learned to read, and that was the only way he was able to trump himself out later. So I propose on Game of Owns, for the first time ever, I just thought of this, and I was inspired by what you were just soliloquying, Eric. You weren't, but I think it sounds cool there. I was just inspired so much that I propose that we start a completely new, I don't want to say segment because it's not a segment, and it's only going to happen once a year, once per season, and we shall call it the Most Improved Player Award. This year's Most Improved Player Award will definitely go to Sir Davos Seaworth for starting on a rock, learning how to read, and using his skills to save the kingdom, hopefully, or at least get us prepared a little bit ahead of time.
He is hooked on phonics.
Yeah, it worked for him. Go Davos.
And, you know, honorable mention to Shireen, yeah.
Yeah, Shireen, yeah.
For teaching him, for getting him started there. And also, why does Knight have a G in it? We may never know.
We don't know. We can't know.
The world may never know.
So there you go. Most Improved Player. I like that. Now we'll have to think about what happened the last few seasons, but yeah. Let us know who you think the Most Improved Player was. I think it was pretty obviously Davos, but there's a handful of shit out there that people can construe in a handful of different ways, so we shall see.
Very much so. Well, guys, we know that was all what you were listening for, our owns of the season. We'll have to get Selena's from her the next time she comes back around on that boat. She's just doing circles around us. We'll have to get that from her. But you've heard it. And now we would like you, if you haven't already, to contribute to us your owns of the season. This is how we do it. Basically,
this
you can
is how we do it.
This is how we do it.
Oh, wow, wow.
This is how we do it.
It's Friday night.
It is Friday night. They call me up.
All right, I know the song, but we got mixed up a little bit. Send us your owns.
Send us your owns, yes.
My party's here on the west side.
So I reach for my 40.
So I reach for my shawty.
I think he says I reach for my 40 and I turn it up. And I don't know if that's like turning up the volume of the song, turning up the intensity of the evening, or turning your 40 up to guzzle some alcoholic beverage. We shall see. Send us that as well on Twitter. Eric knows the addresses.
Yes, twitter.com/GameOfOwns. We are facebook.com/GameOfOwns on Facebook. Play Facebook Ascent, Game of Thrones Ascent, if you are looking for something to do. And we're at contact@GameOfOwns.com is our email.
It's true. And don't forget, there is a place where our show is posted because there are brothers in arms and our lovers in arms, if you ask the right people. Winterscoming.net. It is a news source for all things Ice and Fire, Game of Thrones. I want to say Game and Thrones because it sounded cooler there, but it doesn't quite make as much sense. And we have an incredible community of people that are commenting consistently and adding to the conversation and in turn adding a shitload to the show. So we thank you and we welcome you to join. If you aren't joined, that made sense.
And if you've liked these episodes that we've done throughout the course of season 3, and why wouldn't you, you should head on over to iTunes and give us a rate and review. Nothing less than 5 stars is acceptable in the month of June. It is true. Just ask anybody else that you happen to come across in your daily life, on the street, on yes. the bus, on the train, at work. They'll tell you nothing less than 5 stars is acceptable. Just like Borden Wilson did, they say, I owe these guys a big thanks. I have procrastinated rereading A Feast for Crows and A Dance with Dragons for 2 years. The prospect of reading A Clash of Kings along with the Goo Crew has finally led me to finish these 2 books and rushing through book 1, Grotzi. By the way, if you are prone to fall for voices, you will be head over heels for Selena.
Oh, we were waiting for it. Borden.
1 out of 1 listeners found this review helpful.
Nice.
Yes.
Yeah, listen to the dulcet tones of the girl on the show. I can try to sound like a girl if some of you would like me to, but there's ladies that listen to this show. Maybe they'll fall head over heels for Sam.
Yeah.
That's what I thought Borden was going
to
say.
Well, Borden actually called into the show on Wednesday too. So yes. Big ups to you, man, listening. You were great on the show. It was fun editing your voice and blah, 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 blah.
It was fun editing your voice. What a creepy thing to say.
That's creepy, but hell.
I have control over it. Yeah.
Well, listen, I only made it for the better, I promise. And yeah, it's cool. So
yeah, man. Mm-hmm.
Appreciate it. And just like Borden did, you can go on over to iTunes and leave us your thoughts. We really appreciate it. Let us know what you thought of our season 3 banter. And we'll be sure to read more of these reviews on future episodes.
We really, really want to keep this off season alive. And by alive, I mean, let's carry the same energy that we have now throughout the entire year, because it is such a long wait. There are many sleeps between now and then. And Game of Thrones is here. We're going to be here. We're not going to stop. We're going to continue to do this because it's a blast to do. And you guys make it better by being a part of it. So continue to just tell everybody in your life about Game of Thrones and maybe they'll enjoy it.
This has been our Friday Game of Thrones. Goodbye, everybody.
This is how we do it.
Yeah, buddy.
I'm El Vibra Anaranjado.
Oh,
that's my Spanish name.
I remain Zach Louie, your humble friend.
And I'm Micah Tannenbaum.
He's from New York. Goodbye, everybody.
Go Hawks.
This is how we do it. It's Friday night and I feel alright.